This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. The Kentucky caucuses and Michigan primaries are behind us now, and with the Ohio primary taking place Tuesday, politics is the big news of the week. But it's not the only news. And joining us to discuss Ohio Governor John Kasich's presidential bid at this stage of the race and the other big stories happening in the tri-state are Inquirer Media Ohio politics reporter Chrissy Thompson, WCPO.com, WCPO Insider Digital Enterprise Editor Megan Wesley, and government and political reporter Amanda Seitz, and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. But first,
I want to know about the foundations. I want to know about the state-level compensation. I want to know about all of it. Because the fact of the matter is, while these folks come down and complain to us about tough times and lack of funding, they're lining their own pockets at the expenses of these students, and it's time for it to stop, Mr. President.
State Senator Chris McDaniel from Taylor Mill is calling for an investigation of the compensation paid to the leaders of Kentucky's public colleges and universities after they retire. And joining me now is James McNair with the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting. Good afternoon, Jim. Tell us about the specific case that has Senator McDaniel calling for this investigation.
Thank you for having me on the show, Mark. Well, this is in response to the outcry for the maintenance of the funding from the legislature to higher education in Kentucky. Governor Bevin has called for 9% annual cuts in higher education as part of a cut in government spending in general. And the college presidents have marched on Frankfurt to keep that funding restored. But in view of secret contracts like the one that we wrote about yesterday with the $350,000 10-year payment to the former president of Gateway Community College, that's not sitting well in Frankfurt.
Now, that was one example, I think, that McDaniel gave was the example you just cited of Gateway President Ed Hughes and his compensation package. Did McDaniel cite any other examples of these kinds of compensation packages?
He certainly did. On the Senate floor, he cited the examples of Lee Todd at UK and Jim Latuba at Northern Kentucky University, the details of which I never reported. But he also mentioned that of the former Kentucky Community and Technical College System President Michael McCall, and that's another one that was a fairly non-publicized arrangement between the system's Board of Regents and McCall, who would, upon his retirement from the system last January in 2015, he would receive a year's pay, which came to $324,000. He was supposed to be available for consulting and so on, but who knows? You know, he moved out of state, and whether anybody really needed his services any longer, nobody knows. But that's a very rich price tag for being accessible for occasional consultation.
And as Senator McDaniel pointed out, it looks bad when the state colleges and universities are asking that their budgets not be cut, that they're paying compensation packages like this.
Well, the Kentucky Community College tuition is the highest in the South, and college students in general have been looking at tuition creep across the country. And when, you know, revelations are made about compensation deals like this, then it makes you wonder where the money's really going.
Now, in the case with Ed Hughes, it's the Gateway Foundation that arranged for this compensation. What is this foundation?
Well, like most colleges, it's a separate nonprofit affiliated foundation that exists for the purposes of raising funds for the college and its programs. So it's been a number of things. And yes, the foundation is the entity here that came up with this money. And the primary purpose of the foundation is to help education and the programs. And the criticism is that this money could have been better spent on scholarships, financial aid to students who really need the money to go to college. These are students who are borrowing large amounts of money and entering into pretty deep debt. Yet, you know, here's a chunk of change that didn't come their way. It went instead to a departed president.
Now, how often have foundations like this that are tied to Kentucky's public colleges and universities, how often have they been at the center of controversy lately?
Well, it's a running controversy in Louisville, at the University of Louisville. These foundations have separate boards, separate governance, and they just seem to have different agendas. There's very little communication between the two boards, the regular board of directors or the boards of regents, and these foundation boards. And so they almost seem to be at cross purposes sometimes. The University of Louisville board has been pretty upset with some of the decisions made by the foundation's board over there with regard to compensation for President Jim Ramsey. And it's really come to a head, and tensions have been pretty great. I haven't seen that surface here so much, but much has been written about that by the Inquirer, and so there's some history there.
Now, what has Gateway's governing board had to say about this incentive plan?
I don't know what Gateway's board has said about it. They certainly didn't issue a press release when they agreed to this in June of 2014. It was quietly agreed to and entered into as a legally binding agreement. But then it just sat there out of public eye for what a year and a half before the foundation's annual report in 2015. The fine print. I had to do a public records request with the Kentucky Community and Technical College System to get a copy of the agreement, and that's what led to the story yesterday.
Where does this go from here, Jim?
It could go in any number of directions. This isn't a predictable kind of a situation. Senator McDaniel has called for an investigation by a legislative committee that has this kind of jurisdiction. And so we'll see if they take him up on his request. But it could lead to, student demonstrations on the Gateway Community Campus? I don't know. Maybe there could be some faculty fallout. Maybe some of the donors to the foundation won't like the fact that their money went to this incentive plan. It's hard to say. But if there is a reaction, hopefully I'll hear about it and report it.
Well, Jim, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
My pleasure, Mark.
James McNair with the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting, and you can find a link to his story at WVXU.org. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. What are the news stories you're following this week? Let us know, 513-419-7100. Email talk at WVXU.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. My guest this afternoon, Inquirer Media Ohio politics reporter Chrissy Thompson, WCPO.com, WCPO Insider Digital Enterprise editor Megan Wesley, and government and political reporter Amanda Seitz, and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. And good afternoon, everybody.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Hi there.
Yeah, Chrissy, Tuesday is Ohio's primary, and John Kasich's hoping for a win in his home state. How crucial do you think that Tuesday is in his run for the GOP nomination?
It's absolutely the most crucial election that he's participated in. John Kasich's candidacy is essentially over if he does not win on Tuesday. He has yet to win a state, and if he can say that he's won Ohio, the quintessential swing state, that gives him some momentum going forward. There's also a good chance that the other sort of establishment candidate in this race right now, Marco Rubio, is going to lose his home state on Tuesday as well. That's Florida. He's trailing Trump by double digits there. And if he does indeed lose Florida, he would probably have to drop out of the race as well. So we could see a one-on-one race between Ted Cruz and Donald Trump starting Tuesday, or John Kasich could slip in there as the third person in that race and really make an argument that he is the alternative to these anti-establishment candidates.
Yeah, and at least he would have a fairly substantial block of delegates pledged to him, but he would have to continue to win. I mean, he can't just, you know, win Ohio and then, you know, never win again.
Well, Howard, he came in third in right. Michigan,
yeah.
our neighbor to the north, behind Donald Trump and Ted Cruz. You think that signals any potential trouble for him in Ohio?
I'm not sure it does. But, you know, Chrissy, I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts on this, too. I think, you know, he's also making a pretty good push in Illinois to try to, you know, do as well as possible there.
That's right. And the Rubio campaign is actually, or the Rubio PAC is actually running ads against Kasich in Illinois. So they obviously feel threatened on some level there.
Yeah.
Howard's right. Just to run through the delegate count right now, Trump has about 450 delegates. Cruz has about 350. Rubio has 150. And Kasich has, I think, 54.
Yeah.
And so he's trailing majorly and has already admitted that there's basically no way he could win the nomination outright. The only person, I guess Trump and Cruz technically both have the ability to do it, but really the only person who it looks like is going to be able to pull it off would be Donald Trump. So what Kasich is playing for here is, as Howard said, a chance to win a few more states. He thinks he'll do better in more moderate states in the North and Midwest. And then he hopes to make a play for some of the votes at the convention in July in Cleveland if Donald Trump fails to gain a majority through this voting process.
Yeah, the whole anti-Trump strategy now is just, you know, stop him short of 1,237 delegates, which is what you need for the nomination. And at that point, then, you're going to have a situation going into Cleveland in July for the national convention where there may be some horse trading going on. There may be actually a brokered convention for the first time, which would be amazing. It's like the politics writer's dream, but, you know, it could actually happen this year.
And that strategy just became even more clear a few minutes ago when Marco Rubio's communication director just said, hey,
Alex,
if you live in Ohio,
around.
Vote for Kasich on
right.
Tuesday.
Exactly. And it's a strategy. Yeah, I mean, it's strategic.
Amanda, what's your perspective on this? I mean, just how crucial is this for John Kasich?
Yeah, I think he does absolutely need to win on Tuesday. And I think actually it might come down to this area as well. I think Kasich will have some strong support, obviously, up north and in Columbus. And where he might struggle a little more is in southwest Ohio. You have Butler County, you have Warren County, that they're very conservative strongholds, but they also tend to lead more towards like a Tea Party movement,
yeah.
Religious conservatives. So they might go for someone like Ted Cruz or Donald Trump, too. So I think he'll have a fight down here for sure.
Yeah. What's the latest polling showing on how Kasich is doing?
Well, Fox News poll has him up a few points. You know, the Quinnipiac poll last week had him down about 6 points. You know, it's so hard to say at this point. You know, my gut tells me that he has a very small lead in Ohio right now, but I think Amanda hit it right on the head. You know, down in southwest Ohio and even southeast Ohio, and you go out down a river, those are very conservative voters, and they're social conservatives, and they are fiscal conservatives, and they're not real big – and they're Tea Party people who are not big fans of John Kasich.
Yes. And we see that strategy playing out in which events he has sort
yes.
of chosen to have over the next couple of days. He will be in Cincinnati on Saturday for the, I think it's called the Northeast Hamilton County
Republican Club. Yes.
That's right. It's a very famous pancake breakfast. But
yes. I've been to about 30 of them, yes.
Besides this this breakfast and then an event he has today in Dayton, he's spending most of his time in northeast Ohio, central Ohio, and northwest Ohio.
We will continue our conversation, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney, and my guest this afternoon, Inquirer Media Ohio politics reporter Chrissy Thompson, WCPO.com, WCPO Insider Digital Enterprise editor Megan Wesley, and government and political reporter Amanda Seitz, and also WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. And you can join the conversation, 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And so are we going to be seeing a lot of people swinging through here this weekend? Chrissy was talking about some of the things that are going to go on, Amanda. I mean, is this going to be like campaign central for the next few days?
Yeah, well, I was promised by some people working on the Kasich campaign that if you live in Hamilton County, expect a door knock, expect a mailer, and expect a phone call over the next few days. So you'll definitely be hearing a lot from the campaigns. And there's talk of Donald Trump visiting on Sunday here in Cincinnati. And then obviously we'll have Kasich on Saturday, too.
Yeah, well, and that's I think the Donald Trump visit might still be up in the air, Howard. Is that?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's no official release about it. There's nothing on the website yet. There's no, you know, I mean, he's got a thing scheduled in rallies in Dayton and Cleveland scheduled for tomorrow, which are already on the schedule. But as of, you know, just a few minutes ago, there was no official announcement about a Dayton rally. Cincinnati rally.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if he's holding out to see where he's at in Florida.
I think you're exactly right. They're making a decision about where do we need to be. And one of the things, it's not just candidate visits. You're absolutely right. It's people, you know, doing the phone calls, doing the door knocking, doing the voter contact, which makes a big difference. Kasich is going to have some help. I mean, he has his own organization, obviously, but he's going to have help, I think, from the Ohio Republican Party on that. And, Trump, I know they've organized some of that grassroots type of campaigning, but I don't think that's not the centerpiece of his campaign. The centerpiece of his campaign is him going before big halls of thousands of people and making speeches.
Yeah, Kasich definitely has a very strong ground game. We were just actually following some volunteers earlier this week in Michigan, and that's kind of his signature piece. And you can see where he's had a strong ground game. He's ended up doing fairly well or better than what the polls expected.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk with Mort in Hamilton. Hi, Mort.
Hello, and good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Go right ahead.
Okay, I'm just congratulating NPR, WAMU, WVXU, in coverage of the politics. What I have a question about is why on TV there's lots of talk about Kasich and his experience as governor and all the things he claims he did as governor, and there's talk and all the extolling of virtues while he was a congressman for 9 terms, but there is nothing said on television. Any program, any interview, talk that he has with anyone on television about his experience of almost 7 years or more as a TV investment, as a investment banker with Lehman Brothers.
With Lehman Brothers, right.
For about
right.
7 years.
Chrissy,
no mention of that.
Chrissy, did you want to try to field that one?
Yeah, you know, it was interesting when Kasich first launched his campaign. He talked quite a bit about working for Lehman Brothers. You know, he liked to say he was the only person running who had experience in the private sector and as an executive and as a lawmaker, and that was true at the time. And he obviously Lehman Brothers is a little bit of a toxic term. He likes to joke that, you know. Yeah, I personally bankrupted Lehman Brothers, whatever, guys, out of my two-man office here in Ohio. It's interesting. He talks a little bit about some of the deals that he worked on, but he wasn't a really big player. And because this was a private, it was a publicly traded company, but we can't use public records requests to find out some of the deals that he worked on. So there's not a whole lot of information out there about what he actually did there, and he doesn't like to talk about it that much.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, he wasn't one of the national level guys. He was more of a regional person.
Yeah, he ran the Columbus operation.
But him and an aide, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was two people, basically. But, you know, this was used against him in 2010 when he first ran for governor. It was used against him in 2014 when he ran for re-election for governor. It had absolutely no impact whatsoever, even though, it was a legitimate issue to raise, obviously, but people weren't paying attention to it and reacting to it.
Yeah, and I think, Kasich, I'm trying to remember here, but I believe that he actually made more money many of those years working for Fox News than
yes.
he did for Lehman Brothers.
That's
his paycheck
probably
was
true,
larger.
Yes.
And so it wasn't a full-time job for him. He did commute out to New York City when he needed to, and he flew to the West Coast when he needed to. I don't get the idea from the things that he has said and the things that we do know from interviews with some folks who worked with him that he was really much of a player. He probably... helped arrange some meetings here and there. He had been an influential congressman and did know some of these folks in business mm-hmm. from his time in Congress. But that was about all that he did. And because Lehman Brothers is a little bit toxic, and because there's not much that he can even say about it, he doesn't really talk about it as much as he used to.
Yeah, I think, kind of to Howard's point, that nothing's really stuck from that, his experience or time there. And he has run for governor, so if there were a lot of dirt to be dug up there, I think it kind of would have played out already.
Amanda, how do you think that Kasich did in the debate last night? Did he get a lot of talk time compared to everybody else?
Not as much. I think the debate last night was interesting, though, because Marco Rubio had a pretty strong performance, but I don't know that there were any big winners out of last night's debate because it was so even-keeled. So I don't know that anyone really stuck out last night, and usually Kasich is able to stick out because he is the calm one, so the fact that everybody else was
nice, too.
Yeah.
So,
there wasn't much.
Yeah, the contrast wasn't there. But, Kasich does that, and he's done it consistently through the debates. I just wonder sometimes, how effective it is, just because it seems to me that the typical Republican primary voter this year, not necessarily in Ohio, but just generally, nationally, isn't looking for somebody who's, calm and conciliatory and that sort of thing. They're looking for somebody who's angry.
I think it did help him, though, last week's debate in Detroit. When I was in Michigan, I did hear from people who he's the only adult in the room. And I think some of the candidates did catch on to that. And that's why we did see a calmer debate last night.
And that's right. You're right. And because in that debate, you had, Cruz and Rubio and Trump just, going at each other to the point where the closed captioning person had to put up, things, unintelligible yelling.
Right. And it was almost like a brawl was about to break out.
They couldn't even interpret it. So they just put something up on the screen and said, unintelligible yelling. And Kasich stood out as being calm, reasonable, had some ideas that he laid out,
Chrissy, what was your take on how John Kasich did last night?
Yeah, I agree with what's been said here. It wasn't his strongest debate. He didn't make any mistakes. He certainly laid out his policies and his experience. It was an interesting time from the perspective of the Ohio primary to see Kasich and Trump compare each other on issues. This was a debate that really did come down to policy and issues, and we saw several issues in the debate that the two differ on, where Kasich has clashed with Tea Party conservatives here in Ohio. And that's going to play out in the election on Tuesday. Things like Common Core. Trump said, I'm against Common Core because education shouldn't come from Washington, D.C. And it is true that there are some incentives, some money incentives, and you can qualify for those in many ways. And one is by using Common Core in your state, but it's not mandated from the federal government. And Kasich responded by saying, my state picked these standards and each state should pick their own standards, which is his position. So he does support Common Core, but it's nuanced. A couple of other things they differentiated themselves on were immigration, Trump wanting to stop this green card program for a couple of years, and Kasich opposes that. Kasich actually had the strongest response. Some would have liked all the candidates to be stronger, but he had the strongest response to Trump's sort of tacit approval of some of the violence that's taken place at his rallies. And Kasich said, we shouldn't have violence at rallies, period. So it was a chance for them to differentiate themselves, and I imagine that Ohio voters who are undecided and looking to make their decision tuned in. I don't know how many Ohio voters are undecided. If you have an opinion about Kasich, you probably formed it quite a while ago. And so I do think this race is going to come down to turnout.
Yeah.
That's why I think it will be interesting to watch if his ground game works here, because he is having a lot of volunteers knock on doors and go out. But my question is, will that work if you already know who John Kasich is? You know, will your mind be changed by a door knock or a mailer?
Well, but it's very targeted too. I mean, they're knocking on doors of people that they think are likely to vote for them, and it's basically a nudge. Nudge them to get out on Tuesday. Or do the early voting thing.
Now, Chrissy, your thought is if Kasich doesn't do well Tuesday, that's it for him, right? And I think, does everybody else pretty much agree with that?
Yeah.
So I guess the question is, if someone were to tap him to be their running mate, and I'll start with you, Chrissy, do you think he does it?
I think it depends on who it is. I think it would be difficult to sign on with a Donald Trump, he's opposed quite a bit. If Trump were to tell him, look, you can actually be in charge of everything, I'm just going to be the figurehead president, maybe Kasich would sign on to that. I do think, though, that we are going to see a couple of months before Kasich would jump into something like that. I don't think we're going to see any sort of backroom deal this week or even in the next couple of weeks. I think he legitimately in his heart does not want to be vice president. He wants to be president. He even says things such as, I need to be a leader. That's my personality. I want to run things. Being number two does not appeal to him. But give him a few months to not have a chance of being president and he might come around.
He might change his mind. Yeah.
And I've heard that from a lot of people who know him too, that they say that he just would not do well as a VP. And that he might pursue just something else entirely where he could be the top dog and be the leader.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to imagine. I mean, I know a lot of people in the establishment of the Republican Party believe that, say, a Rubio Kasich ticket would be the strongest ticket that they could put out there at this point, because it would give them a legitimate shot at winning both Ohio and Florida, which are two very, very important swing states in this election. But we all know John Kasich. And he doesn't like being number two. He wants to be number one.
Mm-hmm. Especially to a young guy like Marco Rubio. I mean, can you imagine?
Right. But, at least in that kind of a scenario, with Rubio with less experience, he could at least play the Joe Biden role, the guy that's been around, been around the block, knows how things work in Washington, knows how things, get done.
That's definitely true. I just do want to point out, though, that it looks like Marco Rubio is in the last few days of his campaign. Right.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah, you're right. I think you can stick a fork in him within a day.
Speaking of sticking a fork in things, Megan, I hear that Jeff Rubio has weighed in on the GOP presidential race.
What do you have
to say?
He tweeted the other day that if Trump becomes the Republican Party's choice to become our president, I will quit the party and I will become a vegan. So, which we thought was quite amusing, seeing as how he's very well known for his steak. So we've had some fun with that in the last few days.
We all have our own ways to try to motivate voters. That's Jeff Rubio. If you like steak, you better go vote.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, it, and he might literally have to eat his words at some point.
So. Mm-hmm. He very well might. I know. It'll be interesting to see if he actually comes through with it and decides to be a vegan and what will happen at his restaurants if that is the case.
Did he actually ban Trump from his restaurants? Did I hear that right?
Yeah, that's what he said. Yeah, he said he wouldn't serve him. Yeah,
which I would
when he
love
was down there in Louisville.
And I would love to know what that means if he is the nominee in July at his Cleveland steakhouse that he put up just for the Republican convention.
Yeah,
it's going to get complicated. Amanda, what are your thoughts on the Ohio primary with the race between Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton?
Yeah, well, I think. We shouldn't trust the polls, first of all, as we saw in Michigan. Mm-hmm. That I think it'll come down to how many college students might turn out too on Tuesday. If he gets that younger vote to come out, I think we saw that that happened in Michigan, that he did appeal to some of the younger voters, lower income voters. I think that's why the polls were so wrong too, because a lot of the polls that we saw used landlines in Michigan ahead of the race, and those that's what
typically don't find younger voters with a landline.
Right. Yeah. I know. I don't have one. I'm a millennial, so that's what a lot of people are saying happened there in Michigan, that showed that huge lead that Hillary Clinton had that did not turn out to be true on Tuesday.
I think it was, you're right. I think that's what happened. I think also the international trade issues helped Bernie Sanders in Michigan, where people look at, international trade deals and say, we've lost jobs. They've gone overseas. And you can make the same argument in Ohio. And Democrats are very receptive to that argument in Ohio. We've seen that before. So, 9-point lead for Hillary Clinton, I don't know. I don't know if it means anything at this point.
And Chrissy, what are your thoughts on that race?
Yeah, I think we've talked quite a bit about Ohio being a game changer for Republicans. It's a huge game changer potentially for Democrats as well, because Ohio is a Clinton state. Hillary Clinton mm-hmm. even defeated Barack Obama here in 2008. But so was Michigan, was supposed to be a Clinton state. And if mm-hmm. Sanders can pick up another state here, I don't think he'd actually gain much of an edge on her in delegates in Ohio because of the way the delegates are distributed. But it would be a huge, huge momentum booster. And if he can pick up back-to-back wins in states that were supposed to be locks for Clinton, I think this election is wide open once again. And I do agree with everyone that I don't think that the polls at this point mean anything. It's interesting. Sanders is only going to be here, I believe, once. Am I right about that, guys? I think he's going to be in Toledo.
I believe that's right.
I think he has a Columbus stop, too, on Sunday.
Oh, is that right?
You're right. They're both spending most of the day on Sunday.
Oh, yeah. That's right. The legacy dinner, mm-hmm. the Ohio Democratic mm-hmm. Party. Yeah.
Town hall right. after that, I think.
And then they do another town hall that's televised on, I think, CNN. That evening. Right. So both of them obviously spending a good chunk of time with that multiple event day on Sunday here.
And we'll continue our look at the stories of the week, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guest this afternoon, as we look at the news of the week happening in the tri-state, our Inquirer Media Ohio politics reporter, Chrissy Thompson, WCPO.com, WCPO Insider Digital Enterprise Editor Megan Wesley, and government and political reporter Amanda Seitz, and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's talk with Evan in Oxford. Hi, Evan.
Hello.
Go right ahead.
My question is that it's about Kasich's campaign. Even if Kasich does win Ohio, Trump and even Cruz now have such a lead over him. Is there any way for him to get the nomination without going to a broker convention, or is that what he's hoping for?
I think he's been pretty straightforward that he is hoping for a contested convention. I mean, he said that a couple times on the trail. I think the other hope is, too, that the establishment Republicans, the party leaders, the people that don't like Ted Cruz, don't like Donald Trump, will then throw all their support behind Kasich as well.
Yeah, I think he hopes he can pull something off in Cleveland. And he's said that, you know.
Chrissy, go ahead.
Yeah, everyone's right. And he has come out and said, look, guys, I participated in a contested convention in 1976. If you remember, Gerald Ford did not have a majority. He was not able to. He needed to pick up a few unbound delegates at the convention, and Ronald Reagan was challenging him. Kasich was on Reagan's side and was in charge of trying to pick up some unbound delegates. And, Gerald Ford won, picked up those delegates and pretty easily won the nomination there at the convention. But Kasich says, I was there, I participated in that. It wasn't that bad. We can do this. And the reason that he says it wasn't that bad is because this is kind of a nightmare scenario for the Republican Party nationally. As much as we would love to cover it as journalists, because it would be actual news and craziness, it would be pretty controversial because the assumption is that Trump would come in with the most delegates of anyone. And if there were this effort to get everybody together and somehow get scrape together more votes than Trump has, the largest group of people, Republicans who have voted for Trump, would maybe feel angry.
So. That is exactly right. And 1976 was not that complicated. You know, basically it was just one deal had to be made. The nomination went to Ford. But this would be a lot of deals would have to be made. And these Trump supporters, these people who have been voting for Trump in all these primaries, are going to be really angry. And who are they going to be angry at? The Republican Party and its nominee. So, you know, it's a potential disaster, not only for the Republican presidential nominee, but for Senate candidates all over the country, including here in Ohio, you know, somebody like Rob Portman.
But I wonder how much the Republican Party is looking at the Trump voters and going, these people aren't going to come out and vote for Rob Portman on Election Day. And I think some of them are more worried that Trump being on the ticket will kill someone like Rob Portman's race.
Well, that's why Rob Portman's campaign, and they've told me this numerous times, have been targeting people who are kind of independent swing voters who are more likely to vote for Hillary. And they've been targeting those folks.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. And let's talk with Joe. And Joe, it says you're from Robertson County, Kentucky. So good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. One of the things that none of the candidates seem to be talking about, and I see it on the internet and people that I talk to, I understand I'm in the second smallest county in the state, but nevertheless, the internet makes everything a lot closer. Most of us are tired of politicians being president, and I personally voted for Ross Perot. I will probably vote for Donald Trump just because I don't want a politician in there. But one of the things that I would like to find out is how we can get limited terms on Congress instead of paying the phenomenal amount of retirement to them. And I understand that Congress would have to vote on something like that, and they're certainly not going to vote out their meal ticket. How can a president help the United States get limited terms on Congress?
Is that something they would even have any control over, Howard? I mean, how much
really,
could they really do?
Really, it's not. It's something that a president would have no control over whatsoever. I mean, it's
he could propose it,
Congress,
right?
Yeah,
but that's about it, right?
Yeah, and you know, then you know, if you could somehow get a constitutional amendment passed and go through the state legislatures, but I'm sorry, it's just not going to happen.
But I think with the anti-politician sentiment that we're seeing across the country, I mean, it's kind of self-regulating at this point anyways.
Right. Yeah, and there's going to be a backlash from it, too. Yeah,
Chrissy, do you have any thoughts on that?
You know, the interesting thing would be to see if Donald Trump were to, first of all, get the nomination and then, you know, become the president, if he could stir up enough sentiment to try to get a constitutional convention. When we talk about craziness from a Republican Party contested convention, a lot of people are very afraid about what would happen if we had a constitutional convention. Fears that it could just be a total free-for-all.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly don't see the anti-establishment sentiment in this country running that wild, that we'd be able to pull that off, or that Donald Trump and his supporters would be able to get something like that done. But none of us thought we would be at this point right now, where Donald Trump is very close to just wrapping this up and becoming the nominee. So I think it'll be interesting to see how far this anti-establishment sentiment runs in this country. Does it last for another year, another 4 years, another 8 years? Is this something that gains momentum, or is it going to peter out?
Let's talk with Heather in Northside. Good afternoon, Heather.
Good afternoon. I just wanted to quickly point out that Kasich has been bragging about his job growth rate, and he's going to do for the rest of the country what he did for Ohio. but that's not exactly a good thing because our growth rate during his term was only 7.6% when the national growth rate was 9.5%. We did worse than Indiana, Michigan, and Kentucky.
Okay, Heather, thank you for the call.
Well, if he becomes the nominee, there's a campaign issue.
Yeah, right? he's gonna have to answer for that. I'm sure that'll come up quite frequently.
Exactly. Sure.
Yeah, some other things. Megan, WCPO.com, you've been following the investigation of the Cincinnati VA hospital.
Yes.
And that's just been an incredible story to follow. Catch us up on what's happened. I mean, so far, the investigation was prompted by complaints that WCPO received from some people inside the hospital. Is that right?
Correct, yes. 34 whistleblowers, former and current workers at the VA, came to us last year. They had sent an unsigned letter to Secretary McDonald talking about what they called quality of care issues at the VA. And weren't getting much of a response, so they reached out to us. And so basically what they were claiming was that the CHOICE program, which was created out of the Phoenix wait time scandal as a way for veterans who lived far from a VA hospital or had to wait more than 30 days for care, it was a way to help them get care quicker by essentially sort of letting them see practitioners outside the VA. And so what these whistleblowers were claiming was that people, some of the leaders in the Cincinnati hospital, were cutting services as a way to sort of outsource these patients and cut costs within the hospital.
So the VA came in. They did two investigations, is that right?
Two federal investigations.
Right. Those are done now. What conclusion did they come to with this?
Well, so far we've just got a preliminary finding. And, essentially what they're saying was that the regional director and the acting chief of staff at the local hospital were kind of two bad apples who, were letting these things happen, but that there weren't any quality of care issues. So
they didn't find any patients lacking care through their investigation.
Correct.
Okay. So what's the latest now? What's going on at this point?
Right now we just actually came out with a story on a Vietnam veteran, Art Strum, who, sort of his story is that he was able to get care within the Cincinnati VA. He didn't go through CHOICE. But one of the things that these whistleblowers are telling us is that because of the what they're calling cost-cutting within the Cincinnati VA, even people who are able to get care there, it's not as high as quality as it should be because there aren't as many specialists. So what happened with Art was he broke his arm in July of last year and went to a hospital. He was on a road trip somewhere, and they told him to see a specialist once he got back to Cincinnati. So he went to the VA and he saw all sorts of like physician's assistants and things like that, but he didn't actually see an orthopedic surgeon. So for about 5 months, he was told that it would heal on its own and that it was okay. But he kept saying, I'm hearing bone grinding against bone in my arm. I don't think everything's okay. Mm-hmm. And so finally, he was able to see an orthopedic surgeon who took an X-ray and his first CT scan. And you can actually see a photo of it on our website. It's a really nasty break. And by the time they it had been 5 months at this point, so there was muscle and tendons kind of growing around where the bone was split.
It wasn't healing right because it had been neglected.
Correct. Yeah. So eventually he had his surgery February 1st. He was warned that he might lose feeling in his hand, but his left hand is his dominant hand. So he said, I don't care. I'm in too much pain. Please just do the surgery. And it went well, and he's good now. But, he just sort of says, I wish it didn't have to be that difficult.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Have you heard from any other veterans who've relayed similar stories to you?
Quite a few, actually. We're every day we're getting more. We get emails and voicemails, and so we're in the process of, investigating those and, and looking into them.
Where does this head to? Is it likely Congress is going to have a committee look at this, or are there other potential investigations that could come out of all this?
I think so. At this point, we are still kind of waiting for the actual investigation results to be released. Just the preliminary findings have been released so far. So once, you know, once that's released, I think it's possible that more things will sort of happen as a result. But right now, it's just kind of a waiting game.
Now, WCPO.com also did a story in light of the shooting at Madison High School.
Mm-hmm.
This was a story about how some school districts say that the answer to stopping school violence isn't necessarily arming teachers or having more guns around the school, but it's a mental health it's mental health aspects of the whole thing.
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of the schools are saying the key to this is really, you know, working with students on a closer basis so that you can recognize if their behavior seems off. And so one of the things was an expert told us that about two-thirds of students who have, you know, gone into a school and opened fired have been a victim of either bullying or, shoot, now I can't even remember what the other thing was. Bullying was a big one. And so basically they you know, were trying to look at trying to...
Some mental health issue has prompted this. They've mm-hmm. either been put under some kind of stress or had something happen that prompts them to do something like this.
Yeah, exactly. So really kind of looking at how to provide services to prevent things like that from happening.
Were there any definitive answers on how we do this? It seems like there's always a big debate when we have a mass shooting or a school shooting. Mental health always comes front and center.
Right. And, you know, I think the perspective of a lot of schools and experts within the school system is that mental health is really kind of, you know, you need to start there. And so having a closer relationship with students and then also, you know, peer-to-peer mentoring is big, too. So really just, you know, having closer relationships with students to the point where you can recognize if something's off. But then also not going too far. One expert pointed out that, you know, if a principal or something is just sick of dealing with a student who's causing lots of problems, this shouldn't be a way to get that student, you know, out of the school. So it's definitely a balance.
Mm. And another story that you worked on in the fight against crime. Some of the places that you drive by, you visit every day, some of these places that you just might not expect it, they can actually be hornet's nests for local crime. So what did that story find out?
So the police, Cincinnati police right now, are kind of launching a special program where they are looking out into, you know, different neighborhoods and trying to really pinpoint kind of where the crime is coming from. And so they were trying to say that, you know, a neighborhood isn't the reason or isn't the cause of crime. Often it can be pinpointed to a street or even one address. And so, you know, they're kind of looking at gas stations can kind of be an area that lead to a lot of crime. Sometimes it's corner grocery stores, and it's not even necessarily anything that the, you know, a result of
the owner might
bad management
it, right?
or anything. Yeah. They said a lot of the time it might be the appearance of the building, you know, or and that it just, you know, it kind of looks run down. So people who might be, you know, more apt to commit those sorts of crimes or to deal drugs or something would think that would be a safe place to do that.
So the police are addressing this by special training of officers and getting them more in tune with thinking that these could be problem areas,
yes.
Places you might not usually expect.
Yeah, and they've actually done some training programs, if you will, for business owners and landlords to sort of help them understand how you know, the appearance of their building and some of the things they're doing could be contributing to this unknowingly.
Howard, I have a question for you, too, getting back to the politics.
Yeah.
The 8th District Congressional Primary.
Right.
I think you called this a rugby scrum?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
So where is that
well,
all going?
I mean, obviously, we're talking about John Boehner's seat. It's the 8th Congressional District. The population center is obviously Butler County, but it goes all the way up to Mercer County. In the north, and when John Boehner left Congress, this was, you know, one of the most Republican districts in the state. Clearly, it was going to attract a lot of candidates, but I don't even think the Republican Party thought it was going to attract 15 candidates.
Well, that's kind of led to something interesting too, Howard. Now you have on the ballot, you've got two issues. It's replacement and temporary replacement, right? So you have to be careful when you vote in that.
So on Tuesday, you are actually voting in two elections. You're voting in a special primary election to pick candidates to fill out the rest of the term. There's going to be a June 7th special general election. And then you're also voting for candidates for the fall election for a full two-year term.
Thanks, everybody, for joining me this afternoon. Enquirer Media Ohio politics reporter Chrissy Thompson, WCPO.com, WCPO Insider Digital Enterprise editor Megan Wesley, and government and political reporter Amanda Seitz, and WVXU's Howard Wilkinson.